Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob. Bob, you just told me you got up in like 3 a.m. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm okay. I'm kind of used to it. I don't sleep a ton. Mm-hmm. And it's not like one of those exciting, dynamic go-getters don't sleep a ton. You know, these people who are like, I run 6 companies and I sleep 4 hours a night.
Yeah.
It's more like I have 1 tortured life and I never sleep during it.
The person that informs you that by 7 a.m. they've just left the gym after being there for 2 hours, they're one of the worst human beings on the planet.
I used to be that person, but it's because I was hiding all my pain. Mm-hmm. I tell you, I used to go to the Y at 5 a.m. because the pool would be empty. Ooh. And it was the best swim. Just you and some really tired lifeguard staring at your butt for 45 minutes. It's good. Matt, we have so much to talk about today. Just the Leafs, which was incredibly exciting. I've got a question about track pants.
Yeah.
We got a listener tweet asking about vegetables and stir fry. I want to talk to you about basketball. I want to talk about the greatest pitch in Jay's history. Let's not bury the lead like we did last time. You were at the game last night.
I was at the game. Someone that you know, former off-the-record guest, Nick Sulski, who runs a betting company called Points Bet. He had the suite, and he's like, I got a couple extra tickets. Would you like to go? I'm like, sure. Rick Natras was there, former OTR Hall of Famer. It was a delight to see him. So yeah, I was in a suite. I was in a suite yesterday, Bob.
All right. Well, let's take this one by one. How's Nats doing?
He's doing great.
Yeah. Nats was a lovely guy. I'm sure he still is.
Yes.
Sulski, I heard he made a fortune doing betting online, right?
Well, he sold his old company Monkey Knife Fight. And I believe he did well. I'm one of these old school people where I never ask about money, but I imagine he did well.
Well, you never ask about it because you have it. Mm. You're like the aristocracy where everybody in the room knows everybody's rich. It's like your life is like the menu where they don't put the prices on the food items.
Wait a minute, Bob, are you saying I'm market price?
I don't even know what that means.
When you go to a fancy restaurant and it says lobster and then it just says MP, it doesn't have a price. It's just market price.
It should say KM, keep moving.
Yeah, that's pricey. But real quick on this, I always found, and I've always done this when I was at work, like at the off the record days or wherever, I never want to know how much anyone makes because I'm only going to have 2 reactions. I'm going to feel bad for you or I'm going to be angry. There is no third option.
So you like the NHL back when no one knew what anyone made.
Yeah, exactly. The good old days before the
Gordy Howe sitting next to Ted Lindsay and no one knows who's making more money.
You know what? Another tangent, but sticking with what you just said, Adam Proto was writing in the Hockey News the other day, and it's nice to see Adam Proto back writing in the Hockey News, former OTR guest. I guess that's the theme today. And in his column, he mentioned how on a recent union call, like 8 or 10% of the players, were a part of it. That like basically most players, just didn't want to be part of the union call. And if you're an owner, you've got to be thrilled with that.
There's nothing that lets shenanigans go on quite like not paying attention. Matt, I would love to talk unions with you. Believe me. But we've got to talk about last night's game. So yeah. I've got a ton of 3 a.m. thoughts, but you were there. They made a big deal of it on the broadcast that the crowd was electric, not a word we usually associate with the Leafs crowd. Was it in fact electric?
They were nuts. They were nuts from beginning to end. And it certainly helped that they won and they killed off that 5-minute major on that dumb hit by Kyle Clifford. But even before the anthem, everything about it, like everyone was there by the time the puck dropped. And There was no home playoff games last year. There was no fans there. So this has been building for so long. But yes, electric, energetic, whatever word you want to use, it was an impressive display by Leaf fans last night.
It's almost weird when you talk about the Leafs fans as being very staid, in that Toronto in like the last decade has become known as kind of a crazy sports town. The mm-hmm. Raptors are famous around the NBA for Jurassic Park. The Jays fans, you think back to the infamous seventh inning against Texas, you know, Jays fans, when the team is good, are super into it. So it felt weird to be reminded last night that there's actually good Leafs fans, especially for a playoff game, because those tickets are market price, buddy.
Callback. Yeah, they were, I'm hearing like, you know, $400 or $500 for standing room, like seats so bad that someone will come and punch you in the stomach. Like, that's how bad the seats are, but you'll pay $500 for it.
It really goes to show how much the playoffs really were the point of the season. I'm watching O-Dog on TSN during their, playoff preview or fantasy draft or whatever it was. And he's describing the feeling of leaving the arena last year against Montreal and completely thinking to himself, I don't care about this season. And like, his eyes are super wide, like he's still experiencing it. So this is the payoff of what we've said all year long. It really starts now. And you heard it. And I'm happy you got to be there for that, Matt.
It's funny, though, watching a game live versus on TV, because you miss, even though like you miss so much, but you also pick up stuff that you'll never get like on while watching it at home. Like just the entire game. Toronto, like you felt so comfortable. They felt in control. And I would look up, I'm like, wait a minute, Tampa only has two shots on net. And I'm like, yeah, that feels about right. Like you miss a lot unless you're watching on TV and you can pause and take notes. But being there, just it was cool. And you got the sense from early on, the Leafs were like, don't worry, we got this.
So I wrote up a quick Leafs in six words for the 5-0 win last night.
Yeah.
Here it is. You ready? Now that is more like it.
Everything worked. Shutout, stars scored, special teams dominated.
And I want to get not so much into this, but maybe a bit more later. They also caught breaks. You know, it seemed like of the puck would carom off the boards and wind up on a Leaf stick. You know, when initially Kerfoot rang one off the post, I thought, oh, geez, I hope they're not going to play well but have bad luck, because that would just crush this team right now. To feel like they did all the right things and didn't come away with the win, but it was the opposite. It seemed like everything they tried was working. I want to comment on the concept of timing and how much timing was in favor of the Leafs last night, either by accident or on purpose. The 5-minute penalty kill was clearly the centerpiece of the game. It sounds like the crowd was incredibly excited with every scoring chance that came up during that 5-minute PK. Fair to say?
Yes.
And that clearly energized the team, but I don't think it would have mattered as much if Muzzin hadn't scored by the end of the first period. If they'd gone in even into the intermission, it would have felt like, okay, we survived the first period, now let's go. And I think it would have allowed Tampa to regroup a little bit, but just it felt so important that they score, and they did.
And yeah, no. It's a great point. Mikheyev and Kasha, and look, hey, Kasha back. How nice is that? Just doing the work, getting it to Muzzin with plenty of time. And also on that goal, my other thought was, you know, just, hey, look, Muzzin is also playing well, you know, because I didn't even know if we would see him in these playoffs at one point. But you're right, Bob. Well, the timing of it, just it allowed the Leafs to go into the first period going, you know what? Our hard work is paying off.
That's it. You know what it kind of reminded me of? It reminded me of in football after a really long drive and it turns into 3 points.
Yeah.
How deflating that can be. Like you take the ball 85 yards and you wind up with 3 points.
Yeah.
And how different it is when you actually score the touchdown. And we talk about that as an incredible drive as opposed to, you know, quite a good drive that resulted in points. When that Muzzin goal went in, it felt like they punched through the end zone, and it had that lift that you get in football, like the period at the end of an extremely dominant sentence.
Let me ask you, Bob, building on that, I'm going to give you three options and you tell me what's the most annoying.
Okay.
Number one, you get a long 5-on-3 and you don't score. Now, last night, Toronto got that goal from Matthews. That's option one. Option two, you've got first and goal at the one and you don't get a touchdown. Option three, bases loaded with no out, you don't score. Those three options, which one's the most annoying?
Oh, geez, that's actually a great one. I'm going to say bases loaded, don't score. 5-on-3, don't score. And then the 1 yard line. Because at least the 1 yard line, you walk away with some points.
Yeah.
Even though it is incredibly deflating, the bases loaded, like it just happens so infrequently. You know, with none out, you got to score. But talking about timing in the 5-on-3, it's interesting because I thought Sheldon Keefe, when he called that timeout going into the 5-on-3, finally used time to the Leafs' advantage. It's like, yeah, you guys got to score here. And they did. And it was Matthews' goal. And it was a beautiful goal. But it was another example of how all these things were paying off. He could have called it and they might not have scored. And people would have still said that's the smart thing to do. But they did it. They rested. They got organized. They scored. It's like whatever, you know, it's like seafood, eat food. Whatever they planned, they did right.
And the coaches, you know, there's a lot of talk today about, you know, Spencer Carberry, the power play coach, and Dean Chenyworth, the penalty kill, but the performances from all that. But you're right. And last year I was reading about it. Keith wouldn't call these timeouts in the playoffs, and this time they did. And if they don't score there, all the momentum of killing off that 5-minute penalty and Muzzin scoring, if you don't score when you got a 5-on-3 for well over a minute, that would have been deflating on the other way.
You know, the Kampf goal was great and fun and was really the beginning of the rout. But previous to that, you're playing a team that can score in bunches, that has tremendous offensive punch, that has a great goalie who didn't look great, but, you know, he's probably the most valuable player in the playoffs. So you never want to give him a chance to beat you. But in the first half of the game, they got a couple opportunities and they seized them. And I want to bring up the whole thing about the PK and the power play again, Spencer Carberry and you know, the way that the team is being coached differently. What we saw last night was the Leafs speed at its best. Yes. Disruptive and taking time away from the opposition. Watching Marner on the penalty kill, and obviously we'll talk more a lot about Marner and his game, but what it really made me think of is when we used to talk about the blue wave and they would just turn up the dial on the effort and the other team just didn't know what to do. It was like having a swarm of bees around your head. Like they were so fast and so determined to take away time and space. It was the Leafs at their best. And it made me think about how lucky they were in a weird way that they got Tampa Bay and not Boston. Boston takes away time and space. Tampa likes to play a little bit more open though. And it's almost like it might wind up being a better matchup because it might mean the Leafs can skate better.
I'll tell you, I thought Boston also lost 5-1 to Carolina. I'd still take the Bruins over Tampa, but
stylistically though.
No, I know.
Boston's a tough matchup for the Leafs because they don't let you skate.
Yeah. Oh no, I know. That 5-minute major, and just to your point about speed, but from the Leafs, Tampa got one shot on it. They never got anything going. Like the crowd, every clear, the crowd was going nuts. And the Leafs were aggressive and they should have been aggressive. They've got the speed to be aggressive.
So let's talk Marner, because when you talk about speed and aggressiveness from that first penalty kill.
Yeah.
Is it possible you can dominate the other team while shorthanded? It just felt like he was everywhere and doing everything.
It's true. It is so funny that you almost felt confident when the Leafs were on the penalty kill. Very odd. But I think it was Jonas Siegel writing about this, and he brought up how before the beginning of the year or early in the season, one guy that helped Jonas Siegel or helped Mitch Marner was Greg Harden, the peak performance coach, the guy that was brought in to try to help with the mindset of the team. And you saw it last night, just freewheeling everywhere he needed to be, so patient on the goal that he scored. Thank God he scored it. And it was even strength, you know, get that off your back. That's one of Marner's best games.
You know, poor Chris Schultz. You know, it's sad that we lost him. And I remember standing before the Grey Cup once with him in Olympic Stadium. It was in Montreal. And, you know, you're standing in this arena and you're looking around and it was huge. And you really could feel the weight of the moment for these guys. And I remember talking to him saying, you know, I think I kind of almost get a sense of how you guys must feel before a big game. And he goes, yeah, you know, it's like you go through the craziest feelings and then you get hit and you remember that you're playing football.
Yeah.
And I kind of felt like, you know, for the team and maybe especially for Marner during that penalty kill, it's like they took a hit and it reminded them that they were there to win. And the effort went from, you know, kind of feeling things out right up to 10 and it never went down.
Yeah. And they just, you know, for a team that could have been tight with all that pressure, there was none of that. You know, like I heard Connor McDavid or someone from Edmonton talking about how, you know, the nerves were getting to them a little bit and they were playing at home and they, you know, ended up losing to the Kings. This seemed like this wonderful relationship where the crowd was ready and the Leafs were ready. And there was no sort of, you know, beyond maybe the first two shifts of the game, that's really micromanaging this. The Leafs were just this free-flowing, exciting, like they were the manifestation of the best version of them in the regular season.
It's a great way to put it. And just the whole game felt like the way the first game should feel in the playoffs when you have a 113-point team and, you know, your best goal scorer hits 60 goals and your second best player was one of the, you know, highest scoring forwards in this calendar year. And just all these things that were good about this season that we were like, oh God, I can't enjoy any of that now. And by about halfway through the second period, you're like, yes, this is how I'm supposed to feel when the Leafs are really good. I mean, I love the point that Merrick made about this on his radio show the other day. He's like, you know, people will say how unfair it is that the Leafs have to play Tampa Bay right now. And it's like, well, if you're going to go to the Cup, you're probably going to have to play them eventually, whether it's now or later. And, you know, in the big picture, wouldn't you rather play them when you're healthy and ready to go? And it's your best versus their best?
Yeah. Wait a minute. Jeff Merrick made a good point.
You know what? It was mostly Elliot, and he kind of just grunted a few things.
Okay. Well, hey, listen, to Jeff Merrick, congrats. You broke the streak. You said something clever. I thought the peak moment, you're right, the Matthews getting it on 5-on-3, that settles things. And but that Kampf goal, because he beat Victor Hedman, and then he beat Vasilevsky. When your third line center or whatever he was playing last night, but when your depth guy beats the elite defenseman and the elite goalie, you know, that was just a great moment. I have no real point. I just wanted to say that.
But, you know, it's funny. How fun was last night? A forward wearing number 43 got thrown out of the game for a dumb hit and nobody cared.
No one cared. We're like, nah, we're having fun.
What I felt last night was, like, look, it's obviously hard to play Tampa Bay. And my point of maybe we're lucky we got them instead of Boston, well, you can counter argue that pretty easily. But I do love this point of, wouldn't you rather have Matthews and Marner healthy, having to face this other team, than banged up after a round or two?
Yes. No, that makes total sense. And also Braden Point feels like he's fighting something a little bit. So yeah, it's a great point.
And last night, you know, and Siegel's been making this point a lot, it doesn't come down to Matthews and Marner, but you've got two of the five or six best players in the league. And so they just have to be that good. And if they're not that good, the Leafs are going to have a hard time winning. But they were that good. And you can see, like, we all expect the tap to be turned off, even after a season where there was so much scoring. You know, it was the return to goal scoring in the NHL. But we're conditioned to believe that when, you know, the playoffs start, all these skilled guys, the tap gets turned off. It goes back to, you know, grunts and third and fourth liners shutting down skill. We just didn't see that last night. And maybe that is, again, the matchup. But, God, wouldn't it be nice to think that they put together a damn skilled team and that actually means something in the playoffs?
And one thing that helps, there was only 33 minutes played at 5-on-5. Now, that's crazy.
It is.
But, hey, officials, good. You're doing your job.
Well, it certainly bodes well if they're going to call, it like the regular season. I like the fact that now all of a sudden Matthews doesn't have to worry about having half of the Tampa Bay team draped on him. You know, he's strong and he's a great skater, but he's not Mario. You know, let him do what he does best. Score goals, you know, like Chris Carter, all he does is score goals, you know?
Exactly. Cross cliche.
Cross court reference.
Yeah. Yeah, if there's a cross check, here's an idea: call the penalty.
Exactly. You know what? Talk to me a little bit about Jack Campbell, because I had an observation that was maybe easier to spot on TV than it would have been live. But live, what were you thinking about Campbell's game?
Well, the great thing by the Leafs on the penalty kill and defensively is you didn't talk. We didn't talk much about Jack Campbell. And there was like three or four times where the crowd was like, oh, you know, and then like Campbell did the job. Like he got it. It was a great night when you get a shutout, but you're not praising the goalie. It's not a faced 41 shots. How the hell did he make those saves? Hey, you know what? The Leafs defense, they're going to have to owe him a big steak dinner. No, he did his job. But his job wasn't that difficult.
It's a great point about how he doesn't need to be spectacular. He just needs to be league average.
Yes.
And they'll be fine as long as he's not bad, which is a hell of a statement to make in the playoffs when you expect your goalie to be, you know, sometimes on a lot of nights, your best player, your most important player. But no, you know what really jumped out at me was a point that you made a lot of times. And that was the importance of how a quarterback handles himself in the huddle. And we talk about the trappings of things and maybe we read too much into narrative, but not at the quarterback position. You have to carry yourself calm and like, you know, what's going on. And just when they would cut to Campbell, there was no nerves, you know, he was calm in the net and he looked like he was having fun. Now, of course he was up. I mean, it's a lot easier to be fun, but it made me think about your point, which is, I think as long as he does his job and he looks competent, like a quarterback in the huddle, the Leafs feed off that.
Yeah. Don't do what Donnie Dunk does. You know, don't do the Mike Smith, you know, messed up the puck. And then of course, Deneau scores that mother bleeper for the Kings. But just don't do the stupid thing that deflates the rest of the team.
Let's talk about the line brawl. Hopefully Morgan Rielly's hand is okay.
Yep.
I think that's why Kyle Clifford was in the lineup, was for that possibility. Ironic that he was already out of the game by the time it started. Do you feel like it will be an isolated incident within a 5-0 game, or do you think it's the beginning of something, if not necessarily bigger, that it's going to set the tone?
I'm going to give the boring answer and say I feel like it's isolated. You know, maybe someone takes a shot at Pat Maroon, but overall, I think it's going to be fairly isolated.
I think you're right. I can't remember the name of the Tampa Bay forward who was skating by the bench and the camera picked him up and he had blood all going down his head. And it was a mix between like Mick Foley and Steve Nash against the Spurs.
Oh,
you know, it was like half tough guy, half theater.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I have to admit, and this speaks to my sort of, you know, primate lizard brain, whatever you want to call it. I kind of liked seeing a Tampa Bay forward bloodied up because it felt like we won the fight.
Yeah, which is something that didn't, I mean, not against Montreal or Columbus or Boston. You know, it rarely ever felt like Toronto won the fight.
Well, and especially last year against Montreal, where their physical play put the Leafs off their game. Mm-hmm. And this felt like, you want to skate? Great. We'll track meet this. We'll beat you. Oh, you want to fight? Great. We're going to fight you too. You know, Wayne Simmonds, for all the times that we roll our eyes about having a reasonably tough veteran in the lineup, I was kind of glad he was there last night. Just everything worked, Matt. Like all these decisions that if they lose, we roll our eyes at, just everything worked.
And, you know, early on when Clifford gets that penalty, you're like, oh, I guess Sheldon Keefe, I guess the moves didn't work. And then 10 minutes later, everyone's like, hooray, Sheldon. Yeah, it's in some ways, I love the like today's show is harder, but it's also more joyous. Easy is if the Leafs lost and then you can just, you know, go down that negative route. Today, you got to work a little bit more for it. And I am happy for that work.
Kerfoot looked good. So even though Bunting was out, it looked like he totally belonged on that first line. Mikheyev wound up in the box, but, you know, his speed was disruptive. If you look at that first Muzzin goal, it's Mikheyev out in front of Vasilevsky making trouble. you know, helping to block the shot, like the eye line. Just everybody. You know what? If you want something to be nervous about, Tavares didn't look that great. It wasn't bad. He was fine. For an $11 million player, you'd like him to be more impactful. But honestly, like, he was solid. He was solid.
Yep. By the way, shout out to everyone in the suite. You know, sometimes you're in a suite and then you miss like 8 minutes of action or you miss.
Yeah, anything. Matt, I'm sure everybody knows what it's like when they're in the suite and they miss.
You listen there, Mr. Proletariat. You've been in suites before. It's part of the job.
Yeah, like, I agree. But I'm not sitting there saying, you know, when you're in the suite,
you know, when you're having that butterfly shrimp. Now, I was just going to say, everyone, I loved it. Everyone was watching. Like, you didn't feel this obligation to stand at the back and talk. It's like, get out of my way. I'm eating a free chicken wing and I'm watching the game.
So what was it? Was it pizza and chicken fingers?
Let's see. Chicken wings. There was like breaded shrimp, pizza. Yeah, it was a solid meat and potato sports food extravaganza.
All right. Let's talk chicken fingers here. Properly rated, over or underrated?
Chicken fingers, I think, are... slightly overrated.
Really?
Okay. Yeah.
Wait.
Yeah, I think.
Now the pod really begins.
I know. Well, is it the chicken finger or is the chicken finger the delivery system for plum sauce?
Well, that's a great question. I think one of the reasons I like it is because it's crispy. It's like if you think of it as fried chicken or breaded chicken, you know, I think the fact that it's called a finger makes us think of it as more slight than it really is. It's pretty hefty and they can be quite delicious.
Oh, no, they can. I'll still take a chicken wing over a chicken finger.
Yeah. Okay. So here's a question for you. Why? And I agree with you about plum sauce, but why is plum sauce, like, why is a chicken finger the only time you'd have plum sauce on chicken?
I don't know, but it's
true. Would you ever dip a chicken wing? In even a breaded chicken wing, would you ever dip it in plum sauce?
No, I'm not a monster.
Right. Would you ever do like a piece of fried chicken in plum sauce?
No.
So why is the chicken finger got plum sauce as its go-to condiment?
I want to talk to someone from Big Plum Sauce because I feel like there's a conspiracy with them and chicken fingers.
Well, it's an opportunity. I mean, maybe what could happen is you could expand it a little bit and it would be like, you know, when you put mayonnaise on your fries.
Yeah.
Right. Like, we don't really like, you know, ketchup and fries go together. So like, you know, it's such an iconic pairing. I've kind of like to prefer mayo, and maybe plum sauce could take mayo's lead and expand its horizons.
We can only hope. By the way, your mayo thing, that's the European in you coming out.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. 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 On the French fries. That's the Parisian or the wannabe Parisian in you.
I got to tell you, bud, growing up as I did in a Ukrainian household, it was all animal fats all the time.
It's not a bad way.
Nothing you couldn't put butter on. Nothing.
Yeah. Remember, there's a difference between good fat and bad fat.
Yeah, don't care. Oh, it says here that our remaining meeting time is under 10 minutes, Matt.
Yeah, I know something. I just got that as well. What's going on with Zoom? I thought it could be unlimited if it was only two people.
Oh, come on. All right. Well, it looks like we got to go rapid fire here, buddy. Okay. So
all your 3 a.m. thoughts. You had all these things.
Oh, my God. Well, we're going to blast them. Okay. Eric Fried sent in a note saying, what are your top 5 vegetables for stir fry? I wrote a list. Do you want to critique it?
Do it.
Okay. Number 1, mushroom.
Yes.
Number 2, green onion. Not onion, but specifically green onion. And also like the white part and the green part.
Yeah.
Carrot, but it has to be cut up small and ideally into sticks.
Mm-hmm.
But thin though, thin. Snow peas and my surprise inclusion.
Yeah.
Purple cabbage.
Ooh, I like the purple cabbage. I don't like the carrots. Mushroom is definitely number 1. Bob, I just got a text from Red and Green Pepper. They're saying, what the fuck?
The problem with red and green pepper is it doesn't cook great in a stir fry. It gets mushy.
That's the problem with so many vegetables in the stir fry. The moment you get mushy, I'm out.
You see, the carrot still retains its kind of consistency. You know, it's still got a bit of crunch to it. I would accept celery because I think you have a thing against carrots, right?
I hate cooked carrots. Raw are wonderful.
Right. I could sub celery in, but it just has to have that crunch. By the way, tiny bits of broccoli can also work.
Ugh. I'm referring to
surprisingly good as bok choy.
Ugh, gross.
Well, that's the non-European in you.
That's the seven-year-old in me. But overall, Bob, good list. The cabbage at the end, I enjoyed that.
Thanks. You need it for color and a little bit of crunch.
Yeah.
Okay, so I've got a few things. I'm going to let you pick because we're down under seven or around 7 minutes. We can talk Raptors. We can talk Jays. We can talk Better Call Saul. Or we can talk about a conundrum of etiquette that I have.
Let's do the etiquette.
Of course. What is the statute of limitations on wearing track pants downtown? Now, during COVID, we all dressed comfortably.
Yeah.
And now people are starting to go back into the office. And I think we know you can't really wear your track pants in the office. People will look down on you. But the other day I had to go downtown and I was wearing track pants and I felt off for the first time in about 18 months.
Good.
So track pants downtown. What do you think?
No, bad. If we're all desiring some sort of return to normal, then we need to go back to things that are normal. Like you have to feel shame about wearing track pants out in public. So no. The etiquette is it's time, Bob. Once you got your booster shot, you got to boost your pants game and say goodbye to the track pants.
But, you know, we were supposed to take this reset as an opportunity to reevaluate our priorities.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, oh, that's just Jonah Siegel texting me about the million rush chances that they had last night. You know what, Matt? Maybe it's always been a mistake that we didn't get to wear track pants downtown because it's comfy.
No, listen.
That's what we learned is comfort means more to us than we thought it did.
Jeans are comfortable. Slacks are comfortable.
What the hell's slacks?
I just like to say the word slacks. But these are still comfortable options. The great, like things that we reset on, we now view sick days differently. Fine, that's changed. But track pants, no.
Yeah, I don't know, Matt. None of our pants fit anymore. And I'm speaking collectively here. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know what your situation is, but there's a lot of things I could wear 2 years ago that I can't wear now. So do I got to go out and get a whole new wardrobe just to make you feel like you're somewhere special?
Yes.
And what the fuck for?
Because to make me feel better, just get yourself, Bob, get yourself to a delightful Brooks Brothers and get those pants that have the, that have a little more give in the waist area.
Yeah. Okay. So quickly, because we're blasting through topics here, Raptors and Nick Nurse. Nice that he said that he was just planning to coach the Raptors. Doesn't ultimately mean anything. Somebody eventually will poach him. But you know what really hit me about that comment? Mm. God, the Raptors are good at player development. Like as much as I love his X's and O's, what I really love is it is just a cauldron for improvement, that Raptors bench.
Yep, it is. And the idea of him going to the Lakers is laughable. It's one of the most dysfunctional franchises.
It's almost like when people for years said everyone, you know, whoever came up, you know, it was LeBron or AD or whoever. Oh, they're going to New York. They're going to New York. No one wants to go to New York because it's a madhouse run by a kook.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, no, but you're right. I'm glad that Nurse acknowledged it. And he said, no, I'm just here to be with the Raptors. I'm also glad that we've got Jeff Pollock as our sponsor. If you need a lawyer, jeffpollock.com. That's Jeff with a G there, and a shortened sponsored read.
All right. So I was thinking after the Bucks beat the Celts in that first game and Giannis was triple-double territory, mm-hmm. I was thinking about what you said about how he's good for the NBA. He loves Milwaukee. He stayed there. You know, what are the odds that the Bucks are going to be able to compete with the Celtics when just year after year they go out and, you know, get whoever they want, really? But no, he's – and you know who he reminded me of? This is what I wanted to share with you.
Yeah.
He's Hakeem Olajuwon, but even better.
Yep. He
doesn't fit the mold of the usual superstar. In some ways, we don't talk about him enough because there's flashier players around him. Like, you know, Giannis has LeBron. You know, Hakeem had Michael. But when it comes right down to it, he's going to go down as one of the greatest players of all time. And we're going to remember him for being classy.
100%. It's funny. Right before you said the name, I was honestly, I was thinking Hakeem Olajuwon. And the great thing about Giannis, listen, you want to have flashy stars all going together. You want to have villains. fine. But I need a counterpoint to that. And Giannis is that counterpoint. And he was incredible. On a night where he didn't even shoot that well, he still got a triple-double. His passing was incredible. It was a great performance from Giannis.
I don't think they can beat the Celts. People like to rip on Chris Middleton, but I think that's just like some kind of all-star C-block Raptors fixation. Like, you know, he becomes an all-star and that means that Pascal can't. But Middleton is a great player. No, Middleton's a really good player.
Yes.
And they're obviously better with him in the lineup. I don't know if they have enough to beat the Celts over seven, but it will be a great series. Okay, we only got a couple minutes left. I want to throw a mind-blowing galaxy brain theory out at you. You ready?
Do it.
Okay, you're watching Better Call Saul, right?
Yes.
Okay, so here's my thought. Everyone's wondering what's going to happen to Kim Wexler.
Yep.
I don't think she dies.
Good.
I actually think she becomes a cartel lawyer.
And
double crosses Jimmy. Chooses the life over Jimmy at some central point.
I like it. It's even more of a tragedy than her dying. It's her acquiescing and giving up her moral center for the money.
And Jimmy was ready to give it up for her, and she ditches him.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
Mark my words. It could happen.
Bob, that is great. And usually near the end of of our podcast, we try to find a clever way out, but we got like 90 seconds. We got less than 90 seconds.
We got about 9 seconds.
Yeah. I'm going to tip my cap to you. That Kim Wexler one was an awesome one. I'm now rooting for that, even though that would make me sad. Goodbye, Bob.
Bye, Matt.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.